McCoy runs into Captain Kirk on one of the Enterprise's lower decks.
Oh, Captain. Got a minute?
A minute?
It's Spock. Have you noticed anything strange about him?
No, nothing in particular. Why?
Well, it's nothing I can pinpoint without an examination, but he's become increasingly restive. If he were not a Vulcan, I'd almost say nervous. And for another thing, he's avoiding food. I checked, and he hasn't eaten at all in 3 days.
Well, that just sounds like Mr. Spock in one of his contemplated phases.
Miss Chapel.
Nurse Chapel comes up reluctantly.
Dr. McCoy?
Captain.
Captain?
What's this?
Oh,
Vulcan Plumeek soup. And I'll bet you made it, too. You never give up hoping, do you?
Well, Mr. Spock hasn't been eating, Doctor, and I just happened to notice.
That's all right. Carry on, Miss Chapel.
Nurse Chapel takes the tray into Spock's quarters.
Bones, I'm a busy man.
Jim, when I suggested to Spock that it was time for his routine checkup, your logical, unemotional first officer turned to me and said, "You will cease to pry into my personal matters, Doctor, or I shall certainly break your neck."
Spock said that?
What is this? Don't mean prying. If I want anything from you, I'll ask for it.
Spock sees Kirk and McCoy.
Captain, I should like to request a leave of absence on my home planet. On our present course, you can divert to Vulcan with a loss of but 2.8 light days.
What the devil is this all about?
I have made my request, Captain. All I require from you is that you answer it, yes or no.
Kirk looks at Spock in amazement. Spock closes his door.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek. Created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. A Mock Time. Written by Theodore Sturgeon, directed by Joseph Pevney. Kirk is in Spock's quarters.
All right, Spock, let's have it.
It is undignified for a woman to play servant to a man who is not hers.
I'm more interested in your request for shore leave. In all the years that I've known...
You have my request, Captain. Will you grant it or not?
In all the years that I've known you, you've never asked for a leave of any sort. In fact, you've refused them. Why now?
Surely I have enough leave time accumulated.
Agreed, but that isn't the question, is it?
Spock looks at Kirk awkwardly and sits down at his desk.
If there's a problem, some sort, illness in the family...
No. Nothing of that nature, Captain.
Then, since we're headed for Altair 6, and since the shore facilities there are excellent...
No, I must...
Kirk heads for the door. Spock stands agitatedly.
I wish to take my leave on Vulcan.
Kirk comes back into the room and stands with his hands clasped behind his back. He looks at Spock's stern face in bewilderment.
Spock, I'm asking you, what's wrong?
I need rest. I'm asking you to accept that answer.
Kirk nods and goes over to the small view screen and intercom on Spock's desk.
Yes, Captain.
Alter course to Vulcan. Increase speed to warp 4.
Aye, sir.
Spock doesn't move or look at him. Kirk goes to the door.
Thank you, Captain.
Kirk turns.
I suppose most of us overlook the fact that even Vulcans aren't indestructible.
He smiles and goes.
No.
Spock looks at the pen in his hand. It's trembling. He grasps his right hand firmly with his left.
We're not.
Captain's log, stardate 3372.7. On course, on schedule, bound for Altair 6 via Vulcan. First Officer Spock seems to be under stress. He has requested and been granted shore leave. Ship Surgeon McCoy has him under medical surveillance.
Captain, something's coming in on the Starfleet channel. Priority and urgent, sir.
Put it on audio over here, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir. Message complete, sir. Switching over.
To Captain, USS Enterprise. Starfleet, Sector 9. Inauguration ceremonies, Altair 6, have been advanced 7 solar days. Your order to alter your flight plan is filed to accommodate. Your order of COMAC, Admiral, Starfleet Command. Acknowledge.
Lieutenant Uhura, acknowledge that message.
Aye,
Mr. Chekov, compute course and speed necessary for compliance.
We'll have to head directly there at warp 6, sir. Insufficient time to stop off at Vulcan.
Head directly for Altair 6. Sailor's luck, Mr. Spock. Or as one of Finagle's laws puts it, any home port the ship makes will be somebody else's, not mine. The new president of Altair 6 wants to get himself launched a week early, so we have to be there a week early. Don't worry, I'll see that you get your leave as soon as we're finished.
I quite understand, Captain.
Later, Kirk lies on his bunk in his quarters with the lights dimmed. He puts a hand to his head, sits up, and turns on his view screen.
Bridge, navigation.
Navigation, Chekov here.
Mr. Chekov, how late will we arrive for the ceremonies if we increase speed to maximum and divert to Vulcan just long enough to drop off Mr. Spock?
I don't understand, Captain.
How far behind schedule will diverting to Vulcan put us?
We're on course for Vulcan, Captain, as Mr. Spock ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chekov. Kirk out.
He gets off his bunk with a puzzled frown.
Mr. Spock.
Kirk stands by the lift, hands on hips.
Come with me, please.
Chekov takes over at the science station scanner as Spock walks with the leaden steps towards the turbo lift.
Deck 5.
Spock doesn't look at Kirk.
You changed course for Vulcan, Mr. Spock. Why?
Changed the course?
Do you deny it?
No. No, by no means, Captain. It is quite possible.
And why'd you do it?
Captain, I accept on your word that I did it. But I do not know why, nor do I remember doing it. Captain, lock me away. I do not wish to be seen. I cannot. No Vulcan could explain further.
I'm trying to help you, Spock.
Ask me no further questions. I will not answer.
I order you to report to the sick bay.
Sick bay?
Complete examination. McCoy's waiting.
Spock, whose downward slanting eyebrows give his face even in repose an austere, stern look, frowns even more deeply and steps out of the lift. He turns back as if about to say something, but Kirk closes the lift doors on him. Spock looks about, confused, ignoring the crew bustling through the corridors around him, and wanders away uncertainly. In sickbay, McCoy writes something on a report pad on his desk.
Come in, Spock. I'm all ready for you.
Spock looks up wearily.
My orders were to report to sickbay, Doctor. I have done so. And now I'll go to my quarters.
My orders were to give you a thorough physical. In case you hadn't noticed, I have to answer to the same commanding officer that you do.
Spock considers this. McCoy puts a hand on his arm.
Come on, Spock. Yield to the logic of the situation.
Examine me. For all the good it'll do either of us.
He steps onto the diagnostic bed and McCoy and his assistant tilt it back to the horizontal. Sulu, at the helm, turns to Chekov.
How do you figure it, Chekov? First, we're going to Vulcan, then we're going to Altair.
Then we're headed to Vulcan again. And now we're headed back to Altair.
I think I'm going to get spacesick.
McCoy comes into Kirk's quarters.
Jim, you've got to get Spock to Vulcan.
Bones, I will. As soon as this mission is
completed... No! Now, right away. If you don't get him to Vulcan within a week, 8 days at the outside, he'll die. He'll die, Jim.
Why? Must he die? Why within 8 days? Explain.
I don't know.
You keep saying that. Are you a doctor, aren't you?
There's a growing imbalance of body functions. As if in our bodies, huge amounts of adrenaline were constantly being pumped into our bloodstreams. Now, I can't trace it down in my biocomps. Spock won't tell me what it is. But if it isn't stopped somehow, the physical and emotional pressures will simply kill him.
Kirk frowns in disbelief and paces the room.
You say you're convinced he knows what it is?
He does. And he's as tight-lipped about it as an Aldebaran shellmouth.
Kirk goes to leave.
No use to ask him, Jim. He won't talk.
But Kirk has already left. In his quarters, Spock is looking at a photograph of a young Vulcan girl on his view screen. He turns it off.
Come.
Hey.
Kirk comes up to the desk.
McCoy has given me his medical evaluation of your condition. He says you're going to die unless something is done. What?
Spock lowers his head.
Is it something only your planet can do for you?
Spock.
Spock throws down his pen. Kirk grabs his wrist and realizes how badly Spock's hand is shaking.
You've been called the best first officer in the fleet. That's an enormous asset to me. If I have to lose that first officer, I want to know why.
Spock gets up from his desk and goes towards the other part of his quarters, where a large stone statue stands by the wall.
It is a thing no outworlder may know, except those very few who have been involved. Vulcan understands, but even we do not speak of it among ourselves. It is a deeply personal thing. Can you see that, Captain? And understand?
No, I do not understand. Explain. Consider that an order.
Captain, there are some things which transcend even the discipline of the service.
Kirk goes and stands in front of Spock, hands behind his back.
Would it help if I told you that I'll treat this as totally confidential?
Spock steps away and turns his back on Kirk.
Has to do with biology.
What?
Biology.
Kirk comes to stand beside him. They both stare ahead uncomfortably.
What kind of biology?
Vulcan biology.
You mean the biology of Vulcans? Biology as in reproduction?
Spock nods.
There's no need to be embarrassed about it, Mr. Spock. It happens to the birds and the bees.
The birds and the bees are not Vulcans, Captain. If they were, if any creature as proudly logical as us were to have their logic ripped from them as this time does to us...
He bows his head.
How do Vulcans choose their mates? Haven't you wondered?
I guess the rest of us assume that it's done quite logically.
Spock goes and sits back down behind his desk.
No. It is not. We shield it with ritual and customs shrouded in antiquity. Humans have no conception. strips our minds from us. It brings a madness which rips away our veneer of civilization. It is the pon far, the time of mating.
Kirk turns to look at Spock, who won't meet his eye. He sits at Spock's desk opposite him.
There are precedents in nature, Captain. The giant eel birds of Regulus V. Once each 11 years, they must return to the caverns where they hatched. On your Earth, salmon, they must return to that one stream where they were born to spawn. Or die in trying.
But you're not a fish, Mr. Spock, you're...
No. Nor am I a man. I'm a Vulcan. I'd hoped I would be spared this. But the ancient drives are too strong. Eventually, they catch up with us. We are driven by forces we cannot control to return home and take a wife. Or die.
Spock lowers his head. Kirk stands and goes round to Spock's side of the desk, then stands there at a loss. At his back, the lamp in front of the stone statue flickers, fitfully illuminating the creature's face.
I haven't heard a word you've said. And I'll get you to Vulcan somehow.
He leaves abruptly.
Lieutenant, get me Admiral Comac at Starfleet Command Sector 9. Pipe it down to McCoy's office.
Starfleet Command, yes, sir.
Mr. Sulu, you don't think...
Maybe you ought to plot a course back for Vulcan, just in case.
Chekov shrugs. In his room, Spock is playing on a Vulcan lute.
Communication to Mr. Spock. Lieutenant Uhura here. Captain asked me to...
Let me alone!
Captain, you're making a most unusual request.
I'm aware of that, sir, but it's of the utmost importance. You must give me permission to divert to Vulcan.
But you refuse to explain why it is so important?
I can't, sir. But believe me, I wouldn't make such a request.
The Altair 6 is no ordinary matter. That area is just putting itself together after a long interplanetary conflict. This inauguration will stabilize the entire Altair system. Our appearance there is a demonstration of friendship and strength which will cause ripples clear to the Klingon Empire.
Sir, the delay would be at most a day. I can hardly believe...
Kirk, you will proceed to Altair 6 as ordered. Subject is closed. You have your orders. Starfleet out.
Well, that's that. No, it's not. I know the Altair situation. We would be one of three starships. Very impressive, very diplomatic, but it's simply not that vital.
You can't go off to Vulcan against Starfleet orders. You'll be busted.
I can't let Spock die, can I, Bones? And he will, if we go to Altair. I owe my life a dozen times over. Isn't that worth a career?
He turns back to McCoy.
He's my friend. Bridge navigation.
Bridge navigation.
Mr. Chekov, lay in a course for Vulcan. Tell engineering I want warp 8 or better. Pusher for all she'll take.
Course already plotted. Laying it in, sir.
I see. Very well, carry on, Mr. Chekov. Kirk out.
He looks up at McCoy with finality. In his quarters, Spock is lying on his side on his bed. His sleeping area is lined with deep red drapes and decorated with strange tribal artifacts. Nurse Chapel comes up beside him, goes to wake him, then loses courage and starts to leave.
Miss Chapel.
She turns round. Spock sits up.
Yes, Mr. Spock.
I had a most startling dream. You were trying to tell me something. But I couldn't hear you.
He stands and comes towards her. A single tear has spilled onto her cheek.
It would be illogical for us to protest against our natures. Don't you think?
I don't understand.
He brushes her cheek with his finger.
Your face is wet.
I came to tell you that we are bound for Vulcan. We'll be there in just a few days.
Spock nods, moved. She turns away.
Vulcan. Miss Chapel.
My name is Christine.
Yes, I know, Christine. Would you make me some of that lo-mix soup?
She smiles.
Oh, I'd be very glad to do that, Mr. Spock.
She hurries away. Spock gazes after her solemnly. The Enterprise arrives at a red planet. Kirk gets into the turbolift with Spock and McCoy.
Bridge, it's obvious that you've surmised my problem, Doctor, and my compliments on your insight. Captain, there is a thing that happens to Vulcans at this time, almost an insanity which you would no doubt find distasteful.
Will I? You've been most patient with my kinds of meds.
Then would you beam down to the planet's surface and stand with me? There is a brief ceremony.
Is it permitted?
It is my right. By tradition, the male is accompanied by his closest friends.
Thank you, Mr. Spock.
I also request McCoy accompany me.
I shall be honored, sir.
Captain. We're standing by on Vulcan hailing frequency, sir.
Open the channel, Lieutenant. Vulcan Space Central, this is the USS Enterprise requesting permission to assume standard orbit.
USS Enterprise from Vulcan Space Central. Permission granted. And from all of Vulcan, welcome. Is Commander Spock with you?
This is Spock.
Stand by to activate your central viewer, please.
Nurse Chapel comes onto the bridge.
Doctor, what's going on?
The face of a beautiful Vulcan woman appears on screen.
Spock, it is I.
Dupring, parted from me and never parted. Never and always touching and touched. We meet at the appointed place.
Spock, parted from me and never parted. Never and always. Touching and touched. I await you.
She's lovely, Mr. Spock. Who is she?
She is T'Pring. My wife.
They all look at Spock, surprised. None more so than Nurse Chapel. Spock, Kirk, and McCoy beam down. They materialize in a landscape of red rocks jutting from red sand beneath a red sky. Spock leads them through an archway into a massive circular stone henge.
This is the land of my family. It has been held by us for more than 2,000 Earth years. This is our place of Kunut Khalifi.
He steps into the arena. McCoy moves closer to Kirk.
He called it Kunut what?
He described it to me as meaning marriage or challenge. In the distant past, Vulcans killed to win their mates.
They still go mad at this time.
Spock prepares to strike a gong.
Perhaps the price they pay for having no emotions the rest of the time.
Lovely. Wish the breeze were cooler.
Yeah, hot as Vulcan. Now I understand what that phrase means.
And the atmosphere is thinner than Earth.
I wonder when his T'Pring arrives.
Spock leaves the circle's central stone and comes back over to them.
The marriage party approaches. I hear them.
Marriage party? You said T'Pring was your wife.
By our parents' arrangement. A ceremony. While we were but 7 years of age. Less than a marriage, but more than a betrothal. One touches the other in order to feel each other's thoughts. In this way, our minds were locked together so that at the proper time, we would both be drawn to Kunut Khalifi.
On the other side of the arena is a stone gateway, similar to the one they passed through. Spock turns to face it. Kirk and McCoy wait expectantly. Spock goes back to the central platform with its single pillar and circle of glowing coals, lifts up the beater and strikes the gong. A procession enters the arena, led by two Vulcan males in silver military tunics and helmets, each holding a hexagonal frame set with tiny silver bells. They're followed by an elderly woman carried on a litter. Kirk looks at her in surprise.
Bones. You know who that is?
McCoy looks at the elderly woman in the tall black headdress and shakes his head.
T'Pau. The only person to ever turn down a seat in the Federation Council.
T'Pau. Officiating at Spock's wedding.
He never mentioned that his family was this important.
Walking behind T'Pau's litter is T'Pring, the young Vulcan woman whose face appeared on the viewscreen. She's followed by a bareheaded Vulcan male, Ston, and a barrel-chested figure whose headdress and elaborate axe suggest an executioner. Two helmeted guards bring up the rear. The litter is set down on a low platform opposite the central pillar, and T'Pau raises her hand in salute, her paired fingers splayed in a V-shape. Spock mirrors the gesture and kneels before her. She touches her fingers lightly to his face, close to his ear. Kirk and McCoy watch, perplexed. Spock stands.
Spock? Are our ceremonies for outworlders?
They are not outworlders. They are my friends. I am permitted this.
T'Pau beckons Kirk and McCoy. They glance at each other and approach her.
This is Kirk.
Ma'am.
She studies him, then looks at McCoy.
And they are called?
Leonard McCoy, ma'am.
He names these outworlders friends. How does he pledge their behavior?
With my life, T'Pau.
What they are about to see comes down from the time of the beginning without change. This is the Vulcan heart. This is the Vulcan soul. This is our way.
She makes a gesture.
Carry far.
The bell bearers shake their hexagonal instruments and flank Spock as he returns to the central pillar. He is about to strike the gong when T'Pring strides up to him and holds up her hand imperiously.
Khalifi!
Ston, the bareheaded Vulcan male, watches impassively as Spock turns to T'Pau with a look of surprise. Spock comes towards her, but the executioner blocks the way and raises his ceremonial axe. T'Pau's eyes narrow. Spock drops the gong beater and goes over to one of the outer pillars and places his hands together. All this while, T'Pring remains at the central pillar.
What is it? What happened?
She chooses the challenge.
With him?
He acts only if cowardice is seen. She will choose her champion.
Kirk glances at Ston, the bareheaded Vulcan.
Spock.
Do not attempt to speak with him, Kirk. He is deep in the Plaktau, the blood fever. He will not speak with thee again until he has passed through what is to come. If thee wishes to depart, thee may leave now.
Kirk exchanges a glance with McCoy and nods to T'Pau.
We'll stay.
Spock chose his friends well.
Ma'am, I don't understand. Are you trying to say that she rejected him, that she doesn't want him?
He will have to fight for her. It is her right.
she addresses the young Vulcan woman.
T'Pring, thee has chosen the Khalifi, the challenge. Thee are prepared to become the property of the victor?
I am prepared.
Spock, does thee accept challenge according to our laws and customs?
Spock, eyes closed, hands clasped together in front of his chest, bows. T'Pring glances over at Ston. Kirk turns round and looks at him carefully, then turns back to McCoy.
Think Spock can take him?
I doubt it. Not in his present condition.
T'Pring, thee will choose thy champion.
T'Pau clasps her hands together and steps down from the central pillar. Ston steps forward.
As it was in the dawn of our days, as it is today, as it will be for all tomorrows, I make my choice.
She looks at Ston, then steps past him and up to Kirk.
This one.
Kirk looks up in surprise.
No. I am to be the one. It was agreed.
Be silent.
Hear me. I have made the ancient claim. I claim the right. The woman is...
Riker!
The executioner lowers his axe between Ston and T'Pring.
I ask forgiveness.
Ston steps away.
Kirk. T'Pring is within her rights. But our laws and customs are not binding on thee. Thee are free to decline. No harm on thyself.
Spock is still standing at the edge of the arena in an almost trance-like state, his eyes occasionally rolling back in his head, his hands clasped. T'Pau stands and walks to the stone pillar. Spock comes towards her.
T'Pau.
He speaks.
My friend does not understand.
The choice has been made, Spock. It is up to him now.
He does not know. I will do what I must, T'Pau. But not with him. His blood does not burn. He is my friend.
It is said, thy Vulcan blood is thin. Are ye Vulcan or are ye human?
I burn, T'Pau. My eyes are flame. My heart is flame. Thee has the power, T'Pau. In the name of my fathers, forbid. Forbid. T'Pau, I plead with thee. I beg.
Thee has prided thyself on thy Vulcan heritage. It is decided.
One of the guards ties a purple sash around Spock's waist. All the time he keeps his head lowered, his hands clasped together. Kirk and McCoy exchange a glance. T'Pau steps onto the low platform by the central pillar to make way for the two combatants. Kirk comes up to her.
What happens to Spock if I decline?
Another champion will be selected. Do not interfere, Kirk. Keep thy place.
Kirk glances round at Ston. McCoy comes up and leads his captain away.
You can't do it, Jim.
I can't?
No. She said that their laws and customs were not binding on you.
And you said Spock might not be able to handle them. Well, if I can knock Spock out without really hurting him.
In this climate, if the heat doesn't get you, the thin air will.
They look back towards the central pillar. Spock stands next to T'Pau, his fingertips pressed together, his eyes fierce with concentration. At his back, the glowing circle of coals belches smoke.
You can't do it.
If I get into any trouble, I'll quit. And Spock wins, and honor is satisfied.
Jim, listen, if you...
Bones. Is
He's my first officer, my friend. I disregarded Starfleet orders to bring him here. Another thing, that's T'Pau, a Vulcan. All a Vulcan in one package. How can I back out in front of her?
It is done. Kirk, decide.
Kirk wipes an anxious hand across his mouth, looks at McCoy, and steps forward.
I accept the challenge.
Here begins the act of combat for possession of the woman T'Pring. As it was at the time of the beginning, so it is now. Bring forth the Lirpa.
Two of the silver-robed guards approach, each carrying a long bundle wrapped in purple cloth. They lay them down in front of Spock and Kirk and open them to reveal two Lirpas, staff-like weapons, with a sharp, fan-shaped blade at one end and a bulbous club at the other. Spock grasps his Lirpa purposefully. Kirk takes his from the guard, surprised by its weight.
If both survive the Lirpa, combat will continue with the iron womb.
What do you mean, if both survive?
This combat is to the dead.
Kirk looks round at McCoy and swallows hard. He turns back to Spock, who's glaring at him from beneath his sloping Vulcan eyebrows.
Now, wait a minute, ma'am. Who said anything about a fight to the death?
These men are friends. To force them to fight till one of them is killed.
I can forgive such a display only once.
The executioner threatens McCoy.
Challenge was given and lawfully accepted. It has begun. Let no one interfere.
The two bellbearers retire from the arena. Kirk and Spock face each other like a deadly Robin Hood and Little John, and lock staffs. They push at each other's weapons in a trial of strength. Kirk pushes Spock away. Spock slashes at Kirk's chest with the blade of his Lirpa. It slices through the material of his gold uniform. Kirk pushes Spock over. Spock strikes out at Kirk, hitting and breaking the gong. Kirk clubs Spock in the stomach, making him drop his weapon. They fight over Kirk's Lirpa. Spock breaks the blade against a stone. He kicks Kirk away, seizes the unbroken Lirpa, and attacks. Kirk dodges the deadly blade, grabs Spock, and throws him. Spock knocks Kirk over and prepares to bring the blade down on his head.
Spock! No!
Kirk rolls out of the way and kicks Spock over.
Kroika!
T'Pau stands and raises an imperious hand. McCoy comes and stands in front of her.
Is this Vulcan chivalry? The air's too hot and thin for Kirk. He's not used to it.
The air is the air. What can be done?
McCoy brings out a hypospray from his belt.
I can compensate for the atmosphere and the temperature with this. At least it'll give Kirk a fighting chance.
We may proceed.
McCoy goes over to Kirk, who's kneeling on the ground, blood seeping from the slash across his chest. The doctor squats down in front of his captain.
You're gonna have to kill him, John. Kill Spock. That's not what we came to Vulcan for, is it? What's that?
It's a triox compound. It'll help you breathe. Now be careful.
Sound medical advice.
McCoy retires, and Kirk staggers to his feet.
The iron wound!
The guards remove the two Lirpa from the arena and hand Kirk and Spock a new weapon each, a long strip of leather weighted at one end. Kirk takes his and shrugs. Spock folds his in half, whirls it around his head, and releases the weighted end. It wraps itself around Kirk's legs, and Spock jerks him off his feet. Spock pulls the strap free and lashes at Kirk. Kirk grabs the strap and throws Spock to the ground. They grapple in the sand. Kirk straddles Spock and beats him with his fist. Spock gets his strap around Kirk's neck and drags him towards the circle of burning coals in front of the central pillar. Kirk manages to push Spock off, lands on top of him and gets his hands around Spock's throat, but Spock tightens the strap around Kirk's neck, choking him. Kirk collapses.
Kroika!
Spock's eyes look as if he's slowly waking from a trance as he lowers Kirk's body to the ground. T'Pring and Ston watch impassively. McCoy goes over and pulls the leather strap from Spock's hand.
Get your hands off of him, Spock.
He looks down at Kirk.
It's finished. He's dead.
Spock walks slowly over to two of the guards, leaving McCoy kneeling over their captain's body. McCoy takes out his communicator.
I grieve with thee.
McCoy to Enterprise.
Enterprise, Lieutenant Uhura here.
Have the transporter room stand by to beam up the landing party.
Spock hands the purple sash he wore around his waist back to one of the guards. McCoy stands and comes over to him.
As strange as it may seem, Mr. Spock, you're in command now. Any orders?
Yes. I'll follow you up in a few minutes. You will instruct Mr. Chekov to plot a course for the nearest starbase, where I must surrender myself to the authorities.
McCoy gives him a hard stare, goes back to the body, and beams up. Spock goes over to T'Pring, who steps towards him fearlessly.
T'Pring. Explain.
Specify.
Why the challenge? And why you chose my captain as your champion?
Ston wanted me, I wanted him.
Spock looks at his Vulcan rival.
I see no logic in preferring Ston over me.
You have become much known among our people, Spock. Almost a legend. And as the years went by, I came to know that I did not want to be the consort of a legend. But by the laws of our people, I could only divorce you by the Caliphate. There was also Ston, who wanted very much to be my consort, and I wanted him. If your captain were Victor, he would not want me, and so I would have Ston. If you were Victor, you would free me because I had dared to challenge, and again I would have Ston. But if you did not free me, it would be the same, for you would be gone, and I would have your name and your property, and Ston would still be there.
Spock nods.
Logical. Flawlessly logical.
I am honored.
Ston.
Ston steps forward.
She is yours. After a time, you may find that having is not so pleasing a thing after all as wanting. It is not logical, but it is often true. Spock here. Stand by to beam up.
He goes over to T'Pau, sitting on her litter on the dais. They exchange the splayed-fingered Vulcan salute.
Live long, T'Pau, and prosper.
Live long and prosper, Spock.
I shall do neither. I have killed my captain and my friend.
He nods curtly, turns his back on her, and goes to the center of the arena.
Energize.
Spock dematerializes. McCoy is in the sickbay conferring with Nurse Chapel. Spock comes in.
Doctor, I shall be resigning my commission immediately, of course.
Spock.
So I would appreciate your making the final arrangements.
Spock, I.
Doctor, please, let me finish. There can be no excuse for the crime of which I'm guilty. I intend to offer no defense. Furthermore, I shall order Mr. Scott to take immediate command of this vessel.
Don't you think you better check with me first?
Captain. Jim!
Spock grins ecstatically and grabs Kirk by the shoulder, then regains control of himself.
I'm pleased to see you, Captain. You seem uninjured. I am at something of a loss to understand it, however.
Blame McCoy. That was no Triox compound he shot me with. He slipped in a neural paralyzer. Knocked me out. Simulated death.
Indeed.
Nurse, would you mind, please?
The tall, willowy blonde nurse leaves.
Spock, what happened down there? The girl, the wedding.
Oh, yes, the girl. Most interesting. It must have been the combat. When I thought I had killed the captain, I found I had lost all interest in Dupreng. The madness was gone.
Here we are.
Captain Kirk, message from Starfleet Command, top priority.
Relay, Lieutenant.
Response to T'Pol's request for diversion of Enterprise to Planet Vulcan, hereby approved. Any reasonable delay granted. Comac, Admiral Starfleet Command.
Well, a little late, but I'm glad they're seeing it our way. How about that, T'Pol? They couldn't turn it out. Mr. Chekov, lay in a course for Altair 6, leave orbit when ready. Kirk out.
There's just one thing, Mr. Spock. You can't tell me that when you first saw Jim alive, that you weren't on the verge of giving us an emotional scene that would have brought the house down.
Merely my quite logical relief that Starfleet had not lost the highly proficient captain.
Yes, Mr. Spock, I understand.
Thank you, Captain.
Of course, Mr. Spock. Your reaction was quite logical.
Thank you, Doctor.
And a pig's eye.
Kirk and Spock look back at McCoy.
Come on, Spock, let's go mind the store.
They leave. McCoy snorts to himself with a crooked smile. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.